Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, quick question. How is your social battery doing right now? I'll be honest, mine is a bit on the low side. Maybe it's not setting enough boundaries or just a typical slowdown after our super hectic work schedule. It's so easy to overlook our social needs or overextend ourselves, isn't it? What's your ideal balance of socializing? And how do you recharge? Whether you find energy in crowds or need more time to yourself, understanding your social needs is crucial. I remember a time when I struggled to balance my social engagement with my personal downtime. Y'all know us, we're always outside. So what really helped me was learning to recognize my limits and prioritizing my well-being. I've heard plenty of my peers champion therapy as a great tool for gaining this kind of insight. It's not just for big life issues. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life by equipping you with the skills to manage your social energy effectively. So if you're considering therapy, why not check out BetterHelp? It's an entirely online service, making it incredibly convenient and adaptable to your lifestyle. Just start with a quick questionnaire and you'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And if you feel the need to switch therapists for any reason, you can do so at any time without any extra cost. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait, don't hesitate, head over there now.
Let's talk about the book.
The book.
So you publish a book, What Mommy Never Told You. So what's the meaning behind that title and what's inside the book?
Yeah. So this book took 12 years to write. I finished it maybe 3.5 years ago, but it took 12 years to write because I, for a very long time, felt like my story hadn't arced. So I didn't have that moment where it was like, oh, things got tough. And then she rode off in the sunset. Here's a book to talk about it, right? And so I thought that's what I needed in order to create this body of work. But what I realized is people have constantly sat down to have this conversation that we're having right now. Like, how did you go from East New York, Brooklyn to working and doing some of the things that you've done and worked in? And I was constantly telling the story. And I said, you know what? I need to put pen to paper and manuscript, you know, my journey. But one of the things that came out of it and why I titled it the way that I did is I realized that I'm first generation for so many things in my life. I was the first to graduate from college in my family. I was the first to go to Europe in my family. I was the first to buy a home in my family. And what I was realizing is there's some things that my parents just, they cannot teach me. You know, as a woman of color, I'm coming from a space of, I won't say lack, but I had a late start. Just coming from East New York, mm-hmm. and where I've come from, we didn't inherit the knowledge that some of our contemporaries and counterparts perhaps are getting from their families and their grandfathers and their, you know, those sorts of experiences. And while my mother did teach me a ton, there were just a lot of lessons that I had to learn on my own. And so this book takes you through the manuscript of my life and the lessons that I learned along the way. So each chapter has at the end the Pittman's rules, and they're like the 10 to 20 things that I've learned about that specific topic. And it's everything from career and finance to relationships to self-motivation.
So like one of the things, give us one example of what's in the book that you've learned.
Well,
something that your mother never told you.
Some of the things that my mother never told me. I mean, there are tons of examples, but really understanding that, you know, as a woman, it's important to have male mentorship as much as it is to have female mentorship. I was raised by really strong women, and I have a huge girl network. But when I moved into my career, most of my mentors have been men. So people like Keith Klingscales, as I mentioned, Steve Stout early on in my career was an amazing mentor that genuinely just wanted to pour into my professional talent and help me grow as a professional. Sean Combs, amazing mentor, you know, and being unafraid to develop professional relationships with men is important for women as they continue to move through business.
What's your advice for women navigating a male-dominated industry, which almost every industry is male-dominated? There's difficulties that come with it.
Tremendous.
You have to think about certain things that men don't have to think about. How to dress, right?
Very important.
How to carry yourself in certain environments. I had this conversation with a female. Like, somebody invites you to dinner. It's awkward, mm-hmm. right? It could be out to drinks. It can be awkward. What you wear, it could be awkward. Flirting. A variety of different things that you have to kind of navigate through the workplace, that there's really no set template or blueprint for it. And like I said, men don't have to worry about that, but women do. And it's like, you're probably just one woman or two women and it's 10 men, right? Mm-hmm. So that's something that people don't really consider, but it's an issue. I've seen it firsthand.
Absolutely.
So what's your advice for that?
That is a great question. There's a nuance to the level set that young women need to learn how to initiate very early on. I think men do it sometimes when men sort of alpha in the room and you set your position in a room full of men. You guys know what I'm talking about. You come into a room with 10 dudes, you're going to posture in a certain way so that your ranking is governed accordingly.
Governed accordingly.
Right?
Well put.
Right?
Well put, Erica.
So the same thing, and I know this from being trained by men, right? I was blessed to be trained by men throughout my career. And so there's a way of being as a woman to position yourself as a person of power, a person of respect, no nonsense, but still approachable. And that has worked for me up until a point. Until I got to a sort of apex point in my career, being very dominant in that way was powerful. But at a certain point, it worked against me. And I had to start seeking out female mentorship at the executive level because I had to bring back the softness. Because it was almost like I was competing with the men.
Yeah.
Exterior was too rough.
Yeah.
It was too rough. Mm. And so I had to come into this balance of, oh, no. You see me. You see I'm grounded. You respect me. But this is not an alpha contest.
Yeah. See, the alpha thing, I don't agree with the alpha thing. I don't like to consider myself an alpha male. I'm just a male.
Yeah.
So I think there's two ways that I've witnessed, like, people at the highest level conduct themselves. One, in that manner, which is like very loud and kind of obnoxious, but you know that this person is a certain level of stature because it's like a mob boss, right? Like Johnny Gotti, like is like when he walks in the room, like everybody kind of like fears him or has some level of respect for him.
Yeah.
So you could be extremely loud or you could be extremely quiet.
Yeah.
Like this guy, Jay.
But he's
like,
still incredibly alpha.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but just his demeanor.
Yeah.
He's more of an introvert, quiet. I see that actually more often, especially like the higher, like billionaires, like they're usually very secluded. Absolutely. and nonchalant.
Guarded.
And quiet.
But let's make a distinction though, because that doesn't, so there's a few things around alpha. I literally mean in the canine sense of alpha, right? So from an animalistic standpoint, when a pack of dogs come together, there's a ranking order that naturally happens, right?
No, for sure.
So I didn't mean it in the alpha standpoint. But
I mean, and it's like.
But then also, alphas are usually not loud in real life.
But I think the term alpha is just confusing sometimes because
yes.
It's like
it's misused.
I think like if that should be like, I love Dame. He's actually a personal friend of mine. That's his personality, but his way of being, I think people try to emulate that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And they try to like be loud and stern and da 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 da. And I don't necessarily think that's the most beneficial way to communicate with people.
Absolutely.
But I see a lot of people that they think that way of acting or that way of communicating asserts themselves as the alpha and asserts themselves as the head. And but I think that's not. So I don't know. I just feel like the term alpha.
Loudness does not equal power.
So what does alpha equate to?
Alpha is it's an anchoring. It's a knowing. It's an assuredness in your power to affect a situation. That's what alpha is. It's not necessarily how loud you are. It's your ability to influence at the highest level and make the decision that people are going to adhere to. And you don't have to do that with words.
Yeah, a lot of nonverbal communication.
Tons of nonverbal communication.
Yeah.
Like I just as a woman, like I'm not looking at the loudest guy in the room. I want to see the guy that's like, you know, laid back and calm and poised and has it put together. And he's the one, not this one over here jumping around doing cartwheels. It's like,
cartwheels.
Not the guy popping the bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
You brought up the word apex of your career, height of your career. When I hear you speak, I can feel your energy. I feel like you're still in it. So I'm questioning. How are you seeing where you're at presently? Are you where you want to be? There's some more things that you need to check out because I feel like the apex hasn't hit yet.
I agree. It hasn't. But I am ascending, right? And so I like to believe, you know, you hit that peak and you try to ride that peak as long as you can. And maybe it might plateau a little bit and then you hope to hit another peak. So that's how I think about apex. And I do think though that there is a stage in your career, there are stages in your finances, right, where you've arrived. And then how do you elevate and take it to the next level, right? So you can become a millionaire, that's great. But then you can become a 100 millionaire and that's really great. Then you could become a billionaire. And now like that's something else, right? Mm-hmm. So those are all apex moments within our lives. And so when I say I hit that apex peak, it's like if I'm in a C-suite conversation, that's a different conversation than being a manager or a director, right? And how people receive you is different.
Yeah, so when you're saying apex, you can have a few of them.
Few of them.
Gotcha.
I hope to, and I hope you guys do as well.
So you said something about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to hear this because I used to be a financial advisor before I did this. And when I was a financial advisor, 70% of my clients were women, Black women. And I learned something, that there's a lot of Black women that make a lot of money, like $500,000, $400,000 a year. They're like corporate diversity officers at Macy's and different things of that nature. And they're in their mid-30s and they're single.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never had children. And I started to see a pattern. And I started to realize that this is my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't an equal counterpart a lot, right? Because it's like their counterpart, their age, wasn't making as much money, wasn't at that level of corporate. It might have been a good dude, but he's, you know, is a delivery man, right?
Yeah.
Or the person that is at that level is already gone, it's already taken. He's already married and has children. So from a relationship standpoint, I started to see that it was difficult for.
I'm so sorry, guys. Sorry. My alarm. Go ahead.
So from a relationship standpoint, I started to see that it was difficult a lot of times for Black women that was rising up that corporate ladder to get into a relationship or to. So I don't know what your segment in the book about relationships is, but have you seen that? And what's your thoughts on that?
I absolutely have seen that, but I think that there's so nuanced. So there's a couple things that go into that. I think top line looking at it, yes, there's not an equal counterpart at every step for a lot of these women at a certain age.
And because men can go down too, right? Like men, you can be 40 years old and date the 28-year-old and nobody says anything. That's another thing that kind of, it's hard for a 40-year-old woman to find a 28-year-old man.
That she wants to be with, right? That
right.
Because women like to be able to learn from their men and, mm-hmm. and have leadership within their relationship traditionally, not all women. And so oftentimes men that are younger don't necessarily have those experiences. Some women do, and they do well in that space, but not most. But I think it's a combination of things. I think it's, you know, so many people with me, for instance, I'm single, I don't have children, and people ask me like, what happened? And I'm a heterosexual woman, right? And so it's like, well, a couple things happened. You know, I think first and foremost, I always say I spent too much time on the wrong relationships. That is, I tell any young woman, get in and get out. It's the OG classic. That's what Jay-Z said. That's what Jay-Z said.
Now you're speaking the language. Right? Now you're speaking the language.
Get out. If it works, great. If it doesn't, move on as quickly as possible, right? Learn the lesson, forgive, and move on. So I didn't necessarily do that as often as perhaps I should have. But I also think, you know, creating a space to date and explore, women that are driven in their careers,
they don't have time.
Tend to forget about how intentional you need to be about dating.
That's another thing. I'm glad you said that. They don't have time.
They don't have time. They don't make time.
They don't make the time.
They don't make the time.
They have the time. They don't make the time.
They don't make it because it gets exhausting, right? When you're constantly coming up against the men that may not be equally yoked.
Yeah. There's a list of priorities. Is that how we're prioritizing these things? Like, this is more important than this right at this present time?
Yeah. I had a friend that said to me, very, very, very good friend. She said, you need to approach getting married like finding your dream job. The same way you would go and find interviews and have conversations. You need to find friends that have single friends. You need to be in spaces where there are single men, because of the type of man that you want to marry is very unique. So you're not going to just bump into him at a supermarket. You've got to be intentional.
That's a fact.
And I thought it was brilliant when she said it to me way too late, but she, you know, obviously expressed it. And I think the same thing happens in some of the situations that you mentioned.
Just going back to my financial advisor days, I remember this guy was telling me, he told his daughter that. And he was like, what are you doing to find a husband? Like, you can't just wing it. You got to actually treat this thing like you are, like you said, like you're trying to get a job. Like, you got to actually have a set plan, blueprint. Yeah. Events that I'm going to go to every single month.
Because the places you're going to run into are so limited at this point. This isn't the days where I'm going to go to the library, or I might go to the theater and I'm going to the art gallery. Like, I'm in the club.
Is this why we potentially see a lot of interracial couples at higher, like the vice president and different things of that nature?
I think so. You know, people tend to date within their industry or date in what they're most familiar with and around. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that is the case. And I think I'm going to say something a little controversial, but I think that fundamentally Black youth is not as conditioned to marry automatically the way some other cultures are,
that's
right?
That's not controversial.
Other cultures.
It's statistical,
no, that's a fact.
Right? Yeah, they know they have to get married.
You don't really have a choice.
There's no choice. You're going to get married. It may not be today.
Or you get disowned.
Right.
That's a fact.
Or it's going to be arranged for you.
Or it's going to be arranged for you.
Yeah.
And it may not be today. It may not be in 5 years, but you're going to get married. They also know to be successful, particularly the men in those cultures. Thank you. Know that having a wife represents something way broader. It represents responsibility. It represents anchoring. Like, you think about, have we ever had a single president? We've had a widowed president, but we've never had a single president ever.
No.
Right? So there's little things that go into
societal norms.
Societal norms around being married that don't necessarily exist automatically within our culture. So our young people don't know that we have to get married. Not that we have to, but that it would be beneficial for us to partner up and do some stuff together in that way.
Yeah. I agree.
So there's we're at a disadvantage initially with the mindset, but then we're so busy trying to do it by ourselves, we forget to reconnect with each other and do it together and find someone to do it together with. So,
and while we're thinking about that, the time is passing every day.
Every day.
That we don't.
And you're more set in your ways, and your requirements get a little more intricate. And
then you get more comfortable being by yourself.
Yes.
Which just makes it harder for you to be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always social media that can comfort you when you're by yourself.
Mm. Poor things.
Or Tinder.
Oh, God.
Swipe left.
Tinder swindler.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.